If we can have everybody take their seats, we can get started and get you all out of here as soon as possible. Good morning. The first item on the agenda is the roll call. And we have a roll call, please.
Board Member Tommy.
Here.
Board Member
Here.
Here. So you have the C team here today with the chair and the vice chair. Introductions, Bruce, you had some introductions.
We do have a number of introductions. We've got a laundry list of people. Christine, why don't you...
Good morning.
Why don't we, if section leaders can come up with their folks and so everybody can hear, use the microphone.
Good morning, I'm Christine Boshin, and I am here to introduce my new scientific aide, Donning Wu. She's right here. Donning just graduated from UC Berkeley in May with an environmental science degree, emphasis biology, and I've brought her on board to help us with our on-site wastewater treatment system program.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Good morning, board members. My name is Mary Rose Casa. I'm a section leader in the Toxics Cleanup Division. And we have two people to introduce today. Eli Koslovsky is a graduate of the University of Kentucky with a bachelor's in physical geography, which he describes as a combination of geology and environmental science from a spatial perspective. He's interested in pursuing a career in natural resource management. And he's from the Bay Area originally and is excited to have returned home to get started in his chosen field. Welcome, Eli.
Welcome.
And on behalf of Chuck Headley, I'm introducing Michael Nikolos, a scientific aide in the underground, primarily to work on underground storage tank program. Michael's originally from Elk Grove near Sacramento, and he attended Sonoma State and got a degree in geology, and during his time at Sonoma State, he worked at Region 1. So he's moved to Fremont and to work here, and he's eager to get his hands on whatever work he can do to advance his career.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Greetings, board members. I'm Dale Bowyer. I'm a section leader in the Watershed Division. I'd like to introduce Eileen Leung. She's a Cal graduate also in environmental economics and biology. She's helping us out in our stream and wetland impacts permitting, where we seek to minimize impacts of impacts from wetland and stream alterations and then mitigate for them. She has worked at an analytical laboratory prior to coming to us and also has worked for our state agency with our favorite acronym, Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, or OEHA, as we like to call it. So,
welcome. Good morning, board. My name is Jim Ponton. I'm a section leader in the Planning Division, and today I'm very happy to introduce Ramzi Ibrahim. He joined us 2 weeks ago in planning. He's got a Master's of Science in Environmental Studies, a broad background. He moved up here from Southern California with his dog, Tank, 2 weeks ago, and since then he's helped us in a public outreach meeting for Tomales Bay for the grazing program. He's helping us with our grazing program in general, and he's done some field work, so we're pleased to have him here and thrilled. Thank you.
Welcome. We'll keep you busy on grazing.
Yeah.
Mr. McGrath, members of the board, my name is Bill Hurley, and I'm section leader of the North Bay Watershed Section. And I have the pleasure of introducing two new scientific aides to our section. Jennifer Gagnon comes to us from Quebec, Canada, where she received undergraduate degrees in geography and resource management. And she's a recent graduate of USF in environmental management, master of science degree. And she was a teaching assistant in the wetland delineation classes and class and several other wetland classes, and she's been working with us for about a month now in our 401 water quality certification program. and we're really happy to have her on board. I'd also like to introduce Joanna Portillo Sue, and today is her first day, so we welcome her. She's also got a Master of Science degree from USF, and she'll be working in our municipal stormwater program, the phase two for the smaller municipalities, and I'd like to welcome her. Thank you.
Welcome aboard.
And the reason we have so many introductions is that is an outgrowth of some of the budget back and forth over the last couple of years, where we used to have opportunity to contract with the State Foundation to hire students. That was changed, and now we have the opportunity to hire scientific aides. Technically, they're under a temporary help provision, can't serve longer than 2 years, but they are all full state employees. One downside is we have to go through the full hiring process to bring them in, which is to a certain degree, once we got the okay for hiring for this fiscal year, we went through the process, and sort of the delay is now we're finally getting people on board after going through hiring for the last couple of months. But as you can see, we have quite a impressive group of folks with strong qualifications, and in many cases they're past their student days, and we're hopeful that they're bringing a lot to the table, and they may be in a position that we can bring them on to permanent status in coming months or years.
Given the years of budget cuts and staff cuts, it's good news to see what, 7 new people?
Yes, and we've had, I think we introduced in the last couple of months, 1 or 2 additional, so we've had a number. So it's, and this is significant work that they're doing. We're not just stapling papers and that sort of thing. There's a lot of work that they're
And they're getting jumping. A leg up on the start of their careers. Or their
Very
That's
definitely.
Great news. Yeah. I have no cards for public forum. If anybody inadvertently wanted to speak on a matter that's not on the board agenda and forgot, I'll give you a few seconds to get up here. Otherwise, we'll move on to the next agenda item.
I'd say we, with Tam in the audience, we could...
So let's ask Tam to give the perspective from the State Board. It's always tough duty getting here from Sacramento by 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, I'm not sure if I should thank Bruce or not. I was, just going to sit quietly there, nodding off. We had a long board meeting last night, and your assistant executive officer, Tom Mumley, was in there and hanging there with us until almost, 7 o'clock last night. It was the first time, actually the second time, the board held a workshop on the issue of receiving water limits, and especially as applied to municipal stormwater permits. And not from this region, but from another region, I'll just name it the LA region, there was an MS4 permit adopted by the LA Regional Water Board, for which we received, I believe it was 34 petitions. And so we held a workshop yesterday on just, one particular piece of it. And the reason I'm just raising it now for your attention is because it has to do with our receiving water limits policy, the application of receiving water limits, and whether or how the State Water Board might think about updating that particular component. And so we had a fascinating discussion, which of course I can't go into discuss because it's an adjudicatory matter, but suffice to say the LA Regional Water Board proposed an alternative compliance method. And the alternative compliance method is the development of watershed management programs or enhanced watershed management program, and the development and implementation of those programs, according to the permit, would have the municipalities deemed to be in compliance with the receiving water limits. As you can imagine, that led to a lot of discussion, which I think will continue for us in the months to come. And I especially want to acknowledge and thank the assistance of your assistant executive officer, Tom, who I guess has volunteered or was drafted, I don't know which one, to serve on the State Board's advisory team on these petitions. So really, really appreciate his input and his perspective.
And Tam, that will get, since we are going to have a workshop on one of our MS4s coming up, that will give us an opportunity to try to integrate the current thinking from Southern California and the State Board staff as well.
Right, it's an interesting, very interesting situation for the State Board, because not only do we have the LA permit, which are petitioned to us, the San Diego permit is also being petitioned to us. And of course, you're now starting your discussions as well. You know, as you know, for us, our petition review process can be quite lengthy. I was told yesterday that we just received the record for the LA petition, and if I remember, Tom, correct me, Sam Unger, the EO from LA, said it was over 100,000 pages. Did I remember that right? Okay. So yes, it might take us a few months. In addition to the receiving water limits issue, I think I've reported in previous board meetings that we have identified the anti-degradation policy as one of our board priorities for the next year or so. And so a team has been formed, and they're starting to have some initial focus group discussions with various stakeholders just to scope out the process, where we want the issues we want to look into, and how we want to go about looking at whether guidelines need to be developed for implementation of the anti-degradation policy. This came about because another regional water board, the Central Valley Regional Water Board, Dairy order was challenged in court, and the decision that was reached there basically remanded the order back to the Central Valley Regional Water Board on the grounds that the court felt it did not comply with the anti-degradation policy in terms of doing an anti-degradation analysis and making the appropriate findings. So a question was raised to the State Board as far as developing guidance on how to do anti-degradation analysis, you know, what baseline to use, how to go about making those determinations, what factors should be considered in determining maximum benefit to the state when you allow some degradation as a result of a discharge, whether it be to surface water or groundwater. So we're initiating that effort. That also looks to be a highly controversial as well as interesting topic that will occupy us for the next year or so. But lots of very interesting policy matters.
And that's right. It.
And we look forward to coming up for WQCC.
Thank you. I'd forgotten about that. At the end of the month, welcome to Sacramento, I guess, for 2 days or 3 days, I guess, depending on whether
two and
or not.
A half, yeah.
Two and a half. Okay.
Thanks. Any questions? Thank you so much.
Thanks
for coming. Moving on to the minutes of the board meetings, they're all before you, and I think we can approve them. There are no corrections in a single motion. Moved by Board Member Adekoba, second by Board Member Kissinger. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? So ordered. I get to say that?
Very much.
So ordered. 4-4-0. And with that, we come to the chairman's, board members, and executive officers' reports. I'm going to take the privilege of going first and just give you something that's kind of a feel-good story. Last Thursday to Saturday, I spent most of the time on San Francisco Bay kayaking the coast of Marin from near the gate. We couldn't actually leave from federal property because of the shutdown, but we went from Dunphy Park in Sausalito to Black Point, and with eight of my friends, and camping along the way and getting dirty and taking cold showers and all those things. It is truly wonderful to spend some time on the bay. At one point, when I just rounded the Marin Islands, I turned my kayak and I could see nine of the islands in San Francisco Bay. And we went a little further and there were leaping fish and white pelicans and surf scoters are in the bay right now. It's really rather amazing to have a sense of what's going on. We did kayak right in front of Hamilton Airfield, and it looks like they're preparing for a breach, so I imagine there's going to be a breach ceremony sometime next year.
Before March 1, the contract is up.
We looked at the different lines of piling when you're approaching on the bay, and you can tell which ones are the lights because they've all eroded away from the bay. And a presence, large presence of duck blind. So it's an amazing and diverse environment out there, and you get a sense of what's going on in the efforts to restoration when you're actually sitting about 3 inches below the surface of the bay. So it's just wonderful. So it made me feel good. I hope you guys get a little good feeling. Board Member Kissinger, anything to report?
Nothing to report. Thank you.
Me either. Nothing to report.
All right, Bruce.
Just a few things. One, I highlighted in the executive officer's report the grand opening of the span of the Bay Bridge. And while we have not been an agency visible in that process, which is maybe a good thing, over the past year or two, we have had significant role in the past on that. So it's and it's not going away. The demolition of the old portion of the bridge is also something that we have requirements on, and the need to control the stormwater discharges from that. But one of the outgrowths of this, not only was there very significant mitigation, including Caltrans put in $2.5 million into the East Bay State Park and various eelgrass bed restoration, but $8 million into the various cleanup activities at Skaggs Island in North Bay, so that the transfer from the military to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service could be completed. So that was very significant in that role, and also very extensive permanent stormwater controls have been put in place as part of the bridge. If you go through the maze going on from 580 on to 80 in the maze, you can see an area that's been planted, and it's actually planted to serve as the permanent stormwater control to accept drainage in there and do a biotreatment. There's another significant biotreatment area right adjacent to the toll plaza. So the whole area from the toll plaza around through the maze over to Powell Street is being treated as part of this. So a significant effort has gone into that, and our staff has stayed very connected to that over time. The also significant in this month's report is the removal of fish passage barrier at San Francisco Creek. A number of the South Bay creeks historically had salmonid salmon steelhead runs, and over time, various barriers have been restricting their ability to return or to migrate up. And bit by bit, those have been identified and been removed, along with various restoration activities in the areas where they're removed. So not only San Francisco Creek, but the Alameda Creek system and other groups of South Bay creeks, that bit by bit some of these barriers are being removed and various restorations are going through. So it's good to see the progress on that, and that these really are community-based, multi-agency, but the local agencies having a strong role in seeing this done. It's not just being mandated from on high. So always the challenge for these is getting the funding to do so, and this item highlights that there has been some money from US EPA's Water Quality Improvement Fund, which annually provides money to projects within the Bay Area. A couple other worth noting are that we touched on WQCC coming up October 23rd, 24th, 25th in Sacramento. And I think I've noted to you that Jim and I are going to drive up on Wednesday the 23rd, come back the 25th. Terry Young's just going up for the day on the 24th. So if we need to do some coordination of transport for those of you going up, we can work that out. Also, right after that, on the 29th and 30th this month, is the State of the Estuary Conference. And if you have not seen information on that, I can get that out to you, but that is every other year is a significant conference this year focusing on climate change, sea level rise, and impacts of constituents of emerging concern. This year it also includes the annual meeting of the Regional Monitoring Program, which you heard about last month. So it's significant in that we're recognizing the 20 years of the Regional Monitoring Program and also 20 years of the Comprehensive Conservation Management Plan. So that we can work out attendance, that's right here in Oakland. And then finally to touch on that, for our November meeting, since we will not have the presence of our attorneys, we are setting that up to be focusing on workshops on our priority setting and on trash. And we're still, your vice chair is not from Mongolia, she hasn't sent things, but before leaving for Mongolia, she's given us input on the trash side, and I'll be working with Jim on the priority side. So we'll have that set up and look forward to good discussion in November.
Are there any questions on the executive director?
When is the state of the estuary?
Tuesday and Wednesday, October 29 and 30.
And
there is a Monday night gala over at the Oakland Museum, but the 29th and 30th is just over here at the Oakland Convention Center at the Marriott. So I'll get you information on that. Yeah.
The reception, there is an exhibit on San Francisco Bay at Oakland Museum, and I have not yet been. All the reviews I've gotten are kind of sensational. Bruce, I have a question and a comment. First, the question. I looked at the Allied Defense recycling penalty for failure to pay. Is that the regional monitoring fees themselves? Was there any significant water quality problem associated with that, or it's just they were late in paying the fees into the monitoring program?
Yes, this is Diane White. Yes, they were just late in paying their fees, and because there's been an additional permit that was recently issued and some other activities that are happening out there, we felt it was important to establish that the fees were indeed due, and we have a specific due date in which they need to be received, else we will move forward with an enforcement action.
Well, we certainly want them working on the ships, and they've done a great job in getting that clear.
And just a note on that is that the company that, in fact, it's no longer Allied Defense Recycling, they've reconstituted as Mare Island Shipyard, and they essentially lost their lease. So as of November 1st, they are no longer the party that's overseeing the dry docks. There's a new group that is taking over. There's efforts to get the various people who've been working, actually doing the physical work, to carry over. But Lennar Mare Island is the entity that controls the leases, and so there's been some things that we haven't been privy to, but we're trying to, that's as Diane says, there's timing here, that we're trying to make sure we get this resolved, the issues from the old firm, and make sure then the new firm is up to speed on what the requirements are, but at the same time, make sure that they're still moving forward with various actions that support our work to reduce the mothball fleet and other ship work in the North Bay.
I also wanted to follow up with a comment on the regional monitoring program. In this morning's newspaper, it's reported that Jerry Brown signed Nancy Skinner's bill on looking at the last of the fire retardants. Some of you may remember that about 9 or 10 years ago, the Estuary Institute reported kind of frighteningly high levels of the brominated esters in wildlife and in sediments in San Francisco Bay, which led to the initial banning of the most problematic and further studies, and a rather rapid drop in the levels in organisms. So a fairly quick recovery, and the good news is that when you are monitoring things and responding, you don't inadvertently create that legacy body of contaminants that you're going to have to live with for a you know, decades. So I think it's a success story about how something happens in a fairly low-key manner. Science makes its way into legislation. We have great legislators here in the Bay Area that are interested in protecting the Bay. So it's kind of government at work, without a lot of ripples, but with good effectiveness.
Definitely.
So.
Can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
So you mentioned about the demolishing of the Bay Bridge, the old one.
Yes.
Are we going to be involved in that at all, or that's something?
We have it covered under the order the board adopted years ago.
So that was part of the whole.
Right. And okay. So the recognition that the historic style of demolishing bridges, either sort of dropping them all at once into the water or blowing them up or that sort of thing is no longer appropriate. And so that they've developed a plan for taking that apart. But at the same time, as they demolish that, they need to make sure that they're controlling any potential discharge of materials into the bay. So they recognize that and they're embracing that. And in much the same way, a few years ago, when the old Carquinez Strait Bridge was demolished, they did more of a piece by piece removal, and they're actually recognizing that the materials have value, so they want to as pulling it apart. They're trying to, you know,
use the steel
use
and
the material at the same time.
And so we've already reviewed the demolition plan or the removal plan.
They've submitted those. They're required to submit regular. And update their stormwater management plans, but they've been submitting. They as the item indicated, it was a challenge back in the initial permitting because Caltrans was slow to get us all the plans and designs of what they intended to do, and the governor was saying you need to permit this, and so we came up with a strategy, basically to a two-step permitting strategy, but there was initially quite a flurry of reports before our second permit, and then over the coming years, bit by bit, as they got closer to actual physical construction, they followed up with the balance of reports, giving the design and where stormwater controls were going to be put in place. And so,
and are they going to literally take it all the way down to its foundation?
Essentially down to the sort of the mud line. Unbeknownst to many people is that some of the piles on that are actually redwood, old redwood down there. And so part of the goal here is that, in fact, as Jim was saying, finding old piles as you kayak around the bay, and certainly this came up as part of the America's Cup, old piles and all are a hazard in many respects because they either sometimes have materials like creosote in them that they continue to leach out over time. And so we do want the removal deep enough so that there's any, you know, minimum navigational hazard or hazard from any materials in that. But at the same time, we don't want them to do a major disturbance of the bed. They're in the area where the bridge touchdown is on the Oakland side is one of the more robust eelgrass bed areas, and so that was significant in all the work, both to mitigate for any impacts there, but as part of construction, minimize any further impacts. And in so doing, they were able to do a pilot project of trying to reestablish some eelgrass beds, which little work had been done, and showed that that could be done. So there have been a number of successes which really haven't gotten a lot of publicity out of this, but nonetheless, we're monitoring this on a regular basis.
But they are going to take the concrete and steel footing at the base of the bridge supports down to the mud line.
Yeah.
And just an interesting comment, one of the things that I found out while I was working for the Port of Oakland is the original, the eelgrass and marsh there at the base of the Bay Bridge, which is habitat for clapper rail, an endangered species, is entirely an artificial habitat. When they constructed the original bridge, they simply took the dredge material when they excavated for the pile clusters and they placed it sideways, and the wave energy dragged it all to shore where the tides rearranged it into a really nice marsh and eelgrass bed. So some demonstration that sometimes what we do accidentally should inform what we want to do intentionally. Any other questions on the executive director's report? That brings us to the consideration of uncontested items. We have three of them and we have two information, but before we do that, I get to read the magic sheet. So we make sure that everyone is under oath. All relevant proceedings that any person desires to be considered by this board must be introduced at this hearing, first by the board staff, second by the discharger, third by the public agencies, and fourth by any other interested persons. It's kind of funny to be reading this with no speaker cards, but I'll finish. The board and board counsel may ask questions to clarify the testimony of a witness at any time. Cross-examination of any witness by others will be allowed following completion of direct testimony by all persons. Each person testifying will commence by stating his or her name, whom he or she represents, and whether he or she took the oath to tell the truth. The hearings will not be conducted according to technical rules of evidence. The board will accept any evidence or testimony that is reasonably relevant to the issues. All board files, exhibits, and agenda materials pertaining to this matter will be made part of the record of this proceeding. Additional written material may be made part of the record at the discretion of the board. Those wishing to testify in the hearing will now raise their hand or rise. Do you promise to tell the truth?
So do.
We're done with that. So Bruce, how should we proceed? We have C as action items and D and E as information items?
Correct. So the uncontested items calendar, the first three are action items. I recommend adoption of 5A, 5B, 5C. With a change to 5B, the eagle eyes of the acting chair noted that on 5A on Valero, we did have a provision for a requirement of a long-term flood protection report, and we did not have a similar requirement in the 5B for Shell. So we're proposing to add a provision, a new provision C8 that would go on page 15 of the Shell order 5B, and I'll read it. I think we do have what I'm going to read here is just basically what we're putting up above that long-term flood protection report. The discharger shall submit a report acceptable to the executive officer for long-term flood and or sea level rise protection for waste management units vulnerable to sea level rise. The report shall include a consideration of feasible options for achieving protection from the 100-year flood to account for rising sea levels and increased flood frequency and intensity. The report shall consider the methods developed by the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission to predict and protect against future flooding. The report shall be updated every 5 years throughout the operational life of the site with the most recently available and credible information at the time of the update. Compliance date June 30th, 2014, and every 5 years thereafter. And as I note, this is modeled on provision C7 in the Valero order. And so that makes them consistent, but it is something that we are trying to, with all of our orders, recognize where there are needs for any containment facilities or any other operational facilities that need protection. That while the historic approach has always been to maintain containment, that as part of that we consider the potential for sea level rise or other storm effects in moving forward. So with that addition, the new C8, then the numbering will be adjusted appropriately from C8 onward to add one number to each of the rest of the provisions in section C of the Shell order 5B. With that change, I recommend adoption of the uncontested items 5A, B, and C.
Before we move to act on them, let me just put one piece of housekeeping out on the table as well. As you know, I'm a partner at the law firm Bingham McCutcheon, and in this case, we actually represent both the parties in items 5A and 5B, Shell and Valero. The matters that we represent them are unrelated to the matters that are before the board, I don't have any financial or other interest in the matter that precludes me from participating in this decision. I can also say that I can consider it in an open and unbiased mind and decide it solely on the record that's before the board. And on that basis, I'm not going to recuse myself from it, but I wanted to put that out on the table.
Thank you for that. And since there is a change, is there a representative from, I assume that Shell is aware of the change, is there a representative here that's willing to, can you briefly come up and indicate whether or not you're agreeable to this change? I want to make sure that procedurally we've made sure that any changes are understood and agreed upon, or you have the opportunity to object if necessary.
My name is Natalie Braden. I'm the environmental manager for the Shell Martinez Refinery, and we did have the opportunity to discuss it with some staff from the Water Board prior to the meeting, and so we do accept the change to the order.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I have no request to speak. They are uncontested items, so we have heard from the dischargers that they're agreeable. Can I have a motion to approve the uncontested calendar?
Motion to approve.
I second that.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Do we need a roll call on that, Bruce?
Since I think it's straightforward, uncontested, we don't need a roll call.
So ordered. The vote was for aye and no. No one in opposition and two absent. That brings us to the Eco Atlas update. Bruce, did you have a report on that?
We were not going to make a specific presentation, but I do want to note that we have reported back to the board on a regular basis on the various iterations of the Eco Atlas. It started out as the wetland tracker, and essentially our region, and I have to recognize the efforts of Andre Greenberg to really use the material that comes out of the reporting here to review and analyze what are the aquatic resources, predominantly wetlands and streams, that are being impacted by the proposed projects that we, the applications we get every year. And what types of habitat and resources are being impacted and what that means. And this is definitely a useful planning and decision-making tool. The next step, as highlighted in that item, is to try to really move forward with an online application. And the water quality certification program has been a challenge over the years because every project has a tendency to take on life of its own, but by improving the application process, we hope to streamline the whole effort of permitting, but also make sure that by using the information available in the Eco Atlas, we're aware of what the resources are that we're potentially impacting and what the mitigation needs, appropriate needs are. So it's something that we'll continue to report to you on, but the progress over the past few years has been significant in bringing this whole effort and program into essentially the 21st century.
I would like to add a comment. It's sad in some ways getting old, but you've been through a lot of things. Back in the 1970s and 1980s, there was a stream of criticism against wetland mitigation efforts. Scientists such as Joy Zedler and Margaret Race published critiques that indicated that mitigation measures were not working, they were often not implemented, that they were not being tracked. And I remember Andre completing a report for all of the mitigation efforts in San Francisco Bay that indicated better oversight was necessary, and moving it into an arena where the science is applied to the wetland restoration. We're tracking those efforts and we're getting it done, and we're learning even from some of the inadvertent things that we've done. So. I remember her report. I remember the lack of progress, and it's wonderful to see that this has become not just a matter of tracking, but something which is transparent, so that the public, which is interested in progress, can readily access the information. So I'd like to salute Andre.
And just to reiterate that this is now a statewide effort that while our region has pushed it, now the Eco Atlas is statewide addressing all aquatic resources around the state. So that's a good step. And on 5E, the report on penalty enforcement actions and noting our priorities for the year, I think it's significant not only in the number of actions that have been taken over the past fiscal year, but some of the improved efficiencies in so doing, that we did have just recently the enforcement action before you on the late report submittal of the annual stormwater report, and that is something we're required to follow up on, and we recognize fully that those entities who are slow or potentially not submitting their reports are probably likely entities who aren't doing work on the ground to control stormwater discharges. But really, we'd rather be spending our enforcement time looking at what are those problems that are on the ground rather than sort of the paper violations. And so more and more, as we're able to streamline and improve the efficiencies for those actions that we are required to review and ensure compliance and then enforce on, we're trying to take our limited enforcement resources and focus much more on the ground efforts. So I think kudos to staff for continuing to implement those efficiencies and keep us moving forward. With that.
Any questions or comments on item DRE? I believe that completes the agenda. Any comments on correspondence? And there is no closed session today, is it, Bruce?
Correct.
I just want to observe how this chairman moves things.
Well, all they gave me were the training wheels. So I'll motion to adjourn.
Second.
We need a motion.
I move to adjourn.
A second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're out of here.
Good.
Oh, okay. Meeting's closed.
Yeah, very good.